entering a new market is like a new startup. You never know the twists and turns that you're going to go down. So you need people that are always thinking and surfacing ideas of how can we do this better? How can we get more traction? How can we lean into this aspect, that aspect more to get more output?
Welcome to the International Expansion Podcast. My name is Ramsey Pryor, and I spent the past 5 years taking one of Silicon Valley's fastest growing startups into new markets all around the world as head of international expansion and sales. Tech companies are able to expand overseas faster than ever before, but there's quite a lot that goes into getting it right. And each new market has its own unique and fascinating set of quirks and challenges. The best way to prepare is to learn from people who have been there before. So I started this podcast to gather the best practices from tech's most admired startups. We cover their successes and the things they got right, as well as their mistakes and learnings, all so that you can benefit from their hindsight as you take your company global. Thanks for listening. And if you or your company is looking for guidance on your expansion journey, or if you have feedback or suggestions for future episodes, please visit portofentrypartners.com and send us a note.
Well, hello and happy new year, and a sincere thanks to all of you who listened to the first season of the International Expansion Podcast. I really appreciate all of your feedback and suggestions, and especially the stories about how listening to this podcast and other companies' international expansion experiences has helped you in your role or your career. One of the most common suggestions I received was to go deeper into specific countries and to share some concrete steps to help you get things started in any particular market. So in season two, that's exactly what we're going to do. Each episode will be dedicated to a specific country and we'll focus on the markets that are most often cited as, you know, the most challenging or that require the greatest amount of thought or help or customization to the expansion approach. I'll be interviewing people that have done a masterful job of preparing and executing and adapting their expansion strategy in each of these markets. I hope you enjoy and please keep the feedback coming. Today's discussion is focused specifically on entering South Korea, and I am incredibly lucky to have Troy Malone as my guest. Troy has had one of the most exciting and accomplished international tech careers of anyone I've met. After starting his career off in venture capital, he went on to lead international at multiple unicorn software companies, including Evernote and All Turtles, which is Phil Libin's startup studio, at Weebly and at Drata. He's also a multi-time entrepreneur himself, and he is currently the co-founder of Relevant. Relevant helps global seed stage tech founders gain competitive advantage in the US market through a uniquely profitable marketing system. Troy's first international expansion experience came in South Korea while working at Evernote. And so today we're going to discuss the things that any tech company considering entering the Korea market needs to be aware of in order to succeed. Troy, welcome, and it's great to have you.
Hey, Ramsey, how are you? Glad to be here.
Thank you. And I've been looking forward to this for a long time, and I know that we got to start to know each other and the background, but maybe before we dive into the nitty-gritty, can you tell us in your own words when and how things began for you with Korea personally and professionally?
Sure. It actually goes, unfortunately, at this point, way back to 1991. I was actually a missionary there for 2 years. So 91 to 93, I lived in Korea. And the cool thing about the missionary experience is we lived as Koreans. So we didn't live in a separate enclave or anything like that for expats. It was living with Koreans for that 2 year period of time. And Korea is a very difficult language to learn, and I'm not particularly good at languages, so I really spent a lot of time and tried to have a lot of discipline to try to only speak Korean and really learn the language. And I think that's been a fun thing for me throughout my life to have that capability of being conversationally fluent in Korean. So that was a great, I would say, benefit of doing the missionary experience, as well as, I would say, I got a deep understanding living with Koreans, directly for 2 years, a good understanding of the culture. You can never understand it 100%, any culture that isn't your own, but I feel like I have a pretty good grasp on Korean culture and how it's changed over the past number of years since I lived there. So it's been a great thing to watch Korea grow and thrive as a nation.
That's fascinating and admirable that you fully immersed. And I think changing character sets for any language is one of the biggest challenges to language acquisition. And I'm in admiration anytime I hear that someone has really dove in and taken on a language that's so different from their own. And professionally speaking, Troy, when did things begin for you in Korea?
Yeah. So, after my missionary experience, at the time, Korea wasn't really an A player from a country perspective. Nobody really thought of going to Korea from a business perspective in the early mid 90s, even late 90s. So I stayed in the US with, tech companies. As you said, I started out as a venture capitalist, went into operations with tech companies, and I did a startup called Pelotonics with actually the current CTO and founder of Drata, Daniel Marashli. And I started a company with him in 2008. And we were almost acquired by Evernote. We didn't quite get acquired by Evernote. Our technology stack was not really compatible with their direction. And nonetheless, I came to know Phil Libin through that experience, talking with them about a possible acquisition. And I was on the phone with Phil one day, and he mentioned that they were seeing a lot of success in Japan organically, and they were kind of leaning into that, and he loves Japan. But he said that South Korea was showing a similar trajectory organically, a lot of user acquisition and interest in Evernote. And he kind of mentioned that, I think the way he put it was, hey, this is happening in Korea, but I know nothing about Korea. And that was my kind of cue to say, well, actually, Phil, I know a little bit about Korea. I actually speak the language, know the culture pretty well. I'd be happy to help you out with figuring it out. Let's go over there together. And I was thinking, hey, this is a cool free trip to Korea with some great food, and I can kind of help Phil out and help Evernote out. I didn't think anything more of it than that. But it turned out that the board of directors, at this point, to put it into context, Evernote was the darling of Silicon Valley, had raised, over $100 million. And at the time, that was a big deal. This is when unicorns were actually unicorns. And the board had told him that he needed to, quote unquote, figure out international. And this was at a time when most Silicon Valley startups did not go international as a general rule. It wasn't a thing yet. And so, long story short, after him learning that I had some experience with Korea, we started talking more deeply about what we could do together. And that started my journey migrating to Evernote and leading out the international expansion into Asia there. So kind of a fun story.
You touched on so many things that I'd like to go deeper into. But let me start from maybe the highest level follow-up question. You said that when Phil came to you, you had experience in Korea. He did not, but he felt like he needed to go there. And I feel like these days, unlike back in those days, a lot of companies think about Korea pretty early on. It's an exciting market people have heard of. And what I'd like to ask first is, if I were the founder of a tech company that's heard good things and is considering going into Korea based on what they see on paper, what are some of the most important differences or things that they need to be aware of about the Korean market versus any other market in Asia or any other market anywhere else in the world? But what are some of the first things that you would tell someone like Phil or another founder that's excited about Korea, but the things they need to know up front?
First thing I'll say about Korea that I've noticed over the years, the why of going to Korea has changed over the years. When I was with Evernote, we went to Korea because we saw organic traction, period, end of story. It was kind of chasing traction. Now, however, Korea has actually turned into the major influencer in the region. So Japan now, it used to be that Japan was the major influencer that all the, smaller economies in the region looked to as a leader. And now that's changing over to Korea, especially with technology. So what are Korean companies adopting? What is the Korean populace adopting? That's kind of become a thing. So number one, just from an influencing standpoint, going to Korea can make a lot of sense. But what you need to know going to Korea, a number of things I would say that just come to mind. And I would say the strategy that I employed with Evernote was focusing on three pillars. And mind you, Evernote at the time was strictly B2C. So the three pillars that I was relying on was public relations, PR, to get more wide-ranging coverage of Evernote. And we were very, I would say, fortunate at the time that the press was, like I said, we were a darling of Silicon Valley. So we got a lot of coverage. And leaning into that with a local PR firm made a ton of difference. Took me, I think, two tries to get the right firm. We had one at first that didn't really work out. The next one that we got was fabulous, got us a lot of coverage and kind of like understood how we wanted to work in Korea. But I would say having a good local partner on the PR front is very important. So that was the first thing that we leaned into. The second thing that we leaned into was community. And I can't stress enough throughout Asia and Latin America, how important community is. It's outsized importance compared to the US or EMEA. My experience is that in the US and EMEA, we're kind of too cool for school. Like, we don't need to go to your event. You know, I'd rather go home and spend time with my family and put something on the barbecue. You know what I mean? But when it comes to Asia, when it comes to Latin America, getting people together, especially pre-COVID and now post-COVID, is definitely something that we leaned into in a big way. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. But community was a major pillar of building Evernote over there. And then the last thing was partnerships. But I want to stress on the partnerships front, it was kind of not the usual thing that people will tell you to do by getting, say, a reseller or something like that. We were not B2C. So we didn't, B2B, sorry. So we didn't need kind of the reseller angle. We needed more partnerships that could get us distribution. So we're talking Korea Telecom. You know, I did a deal in, you know, throughout the region. So Taiwan Mobile was another one that we did a deal with that really, they leaned in millions of dollars of marketing for Evernote and Taiwan Mobile, or Evernote and Korea Telecom, which made a huge difference in getting our name out there to a wide, wide range of people. So those were the three kind of pillars that I went down. But to answer your question more specifically, in Korea, I think the number one rule with Korea and many other markets is to realize you don't know anything until you find locals that you can trust and talk with and figure things out with. I think one of the major errors that I've made in my career early on was relying too much on data that I get from analyst reports and you know, things that I find on the internet, et cetera, and kind of thinking that that's the God's truth, you know, where in reality, being in country, physically talking with people, watching people use their devices and your product and other products that are in the space, has given me much more ideas and success than simply doing research ahead of time and kind of like thinking that that's all I needed to do and then going in.
Super helpful. And there's a lot within what you said that I'd like to even go deeper on and double click on. So let's start with the PR. I think that a lot of companies, when they go into, whether it's Europe or Asia, they know that they're going to need help and they know that they don't understand the channels and they'd love to find the perfect match of a PR company. It sounds like you went through a few before you found the right one. How did you go about finding the first agency? And then how did you go about finding the right agency if the first one didn't work out? And at what point do you bring them in?
When Phil brought me on to run APAC at Evernote, I literally had zero connections in region. And I'm talking zero. It had been many, many years since my missionary experience. Business on the internet, as far as like technology, was so robust in the US that my career was frankly just focused on the US for many, many years. Then I got this opportunity to get to not just Korea, but to APAC in general. And I think it's worth kind of mentioning some of the tactics that I did there, because a lot of people think, well, you need a lot of connection. You don't need any connections in today's day and age. I simply went to Twitter and found a lot of interesting people in region and connected with them. And this is kind of a funny story. So our key influencer in Korea, who is a best friend of mine now, and will always be, you know, we'll be together forever. His name's Mr. Hong, and he does not speak a lick of English. And at the time, I was very rusty in Korean, and I found him on Twitter. And this is kind of a cool hack for Korea or other countries that have phonetically based languages. I knew how to read and write Korean, so I started noticing that people were spelling Evernote in Korean like Ebonote. It was phonetically spelled. Ebonote is Evernote in Korean, right? So I took those characters, and then I had a perfect filtered search for everyone that was talking about Evernote in Korea on Twitter. Like, what a game changer, right? So then, you know, I do that, and there's a lot of stupid talk out there you have to filter through that's just saying nothing really. But then I started noticing themes, and I started noticing people that were speaking with some consistency, etc. And Mr. Hong was one of those people that was speaking with a lot of consistency. He's an author, and he was writing technology books and highlighting hot companies like Evernote, Box, Dropbox, etc. So I reached out to him, and we laugh about it to this day, but we had a very awkward discussion on the phone. I don't even know how we connected. I think it was Skype. This was back in the Skype days, but we had a very awkward Skype call. And the only thing that came out of that call was me being able to communicate the fact that I was going to be traveling to Korea and I wanted to meet him in person. So that's just an example of what you can do when you have no connections in any particular country or region or whatever, is to kind of think very clever about how you can listen in on discussions that are already happening about your product or about themes that your product applies to, right? And so that was kind of an example of how I got with Mr. Hong. And the rest is history. We did absolutely amazing things together. And I'll talk a little bit more about some of the things that Mr. Hong brought to the table for us. But that was a real world example of some tactics that really paid off for me. And I started doing that in all the different countries that I was over. And I got to meet some very amazing people that helped us tremendously. So getting back to your question, the first PR firm that we hired was just searching on Google. And again, this is why I kind of say, you can do a lot of analysis on Google. You can get a lot of data and information, but be careful how much you weight it. So we went in with the first PR firm, just finding them through Google and kind of interviewing a few. They weren't a good fit. We were a Silicon Valley company doing things differently, kind of exciting, pushing the boundaries, and they were very conservative Korean, which is kind of the culture, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to stick out by any means. You know, you want to blend in is kind of the culture. So we then ended up through doing some networking, found a firm named Hoffman, which the founder was actually in Silicon Valley in San Francisco. And we were put in touch with the Korea team. And from the get-go, I could just see that they were willing to take some risks, think differently, do things differently. And I think that that was a byproduct of them being connected to a Silicon Valley kind of home base, if you will.
I found that's true of early hires, too. The people that understand both worlds, you need that bridge so that they know where you're coming from and they also know what's realistic and achievable and how to bridge those two. Coming back to the topic of community, I think Evernote is a fantastic example of a company that, and a brand that almost immediately you think about community and you think about people who are really passionate about the product. how do you light that sort of fire in Korea? Or how do you pour gas on it? How do you think about knowing that community is going to be big for your company? How do you get that started in a place like Korea? And how is that different from other places?
Yeah, so Korea is definitely very different. Although it's similar to a lot of other Asian countries like Taiwan. I did a lot in China. Mainland was different, but similar. Hong Kong, Taiwan were definitely more in line, I would say, with Korea. Same with Japan. But really, I had to learn a few things. And this is where my kind of like missionary background kind of came in. So if you can imagine me being 19 years old in the mountains, sitting at a Buddhist temple, sitting Indian style, looking over the valley with just gorgeous views with a Buddhist monk talking deep things, right? That was kind of an understanding I had of Korea, is just the deep kind of Buddhist background. And frankly, something that tied into Evernote that was an interesting connection was record keeping. So Koreans, as a minjok or a people, have been keeping records for literally thousands upon thousands of years. And the monks in the mountains, a lot of what they did was, before the printing press, they would just write out the scriptures and the records going forward. And they would literally like just duplicate. It's kind of like looking at a book like the Bible and saying, go write this, you know, go rewrite this so that other people can have it. And so they have this deep culture of record keeping, and how record keeping ties into both the country as well as the individual's success. Right? It's past learnings being passed through the generations that ultimately help the present day. So there's this deep culture. And like it didn't hit me until a little bit later, because we started doing conferences in Korea. And one of the main questions we always posed at a conference, and we always would have one person speak on, was called Kyudok Munhwa. Kyudok is a record and Munhwa is a culture. So the culture of record keeping in Korea. And they would always ask, why do we love Evernote so much? And it would be Kyudok Munhwa. It would be, we have a culture of record keeping, right? And so we would kind of lean into that and really dig into it in our conferences. So you can see, like, our conference wasn't like all about us. It was about, how does your culture here in Korea intertwine with what we're trying to accomplish as a company for all of mankind, right? And that suddenly puts you on a much deeper level as a company than anything else, right? Like, what company talks like that to a particular country? So that was a big theme that we tied into. And from a community perspective, I started with one meetup and we got about 40 people there. And I was like, okay, this is cool. This is interesting. And then we did another meetup and about 100 people came. And then it was at this time after that meetup that I talked with Mr. Hong. And he said, we were having lunch after our meetup. And he said, I said, well, next time I come, let's do another meetup. Again, I'm thinking small, you know? And he looks at me and he goes, I don't think we should do a meetup. And I'm like, why not? And he said, well, I think we should do a conference, a conference. And I said, my eyes lit up and I said, well, tell me, what do you mean? Like, we should do a conference. Is that even possible? Whatever. And fast forward a couple of years from the time we did our first meetups, we were doing 3,000 people conferences, which was, by the way, triple the number of people that we would get at our global conference that we did in San Francisco. And we were doing it profitably, so it wasn't costing us any money. We were actually selling tickets, getting sponsors that covered the full cost of a 3,000 person conference. So that was fully leaning into the community aspect. People in Korea wanted to come out. They wanted to meet in person. and they wanted to share their best practices with Evernote, understand why they love Evernote so much, et cetera, et cetera. And it was a deeper experience than I've ever had at any other company with a particular country or a particular region. So that was really cool to, number one, discover and then fully lean into. And I'm talking, when we had our conferences, we would have the biggest newspapers, television coverage. We would, I mean, you know, the mayor of Seoul, Korea, which is a huge position, if you guys can imagine, that's normally the next president of Korea would be a mayor of Seoul. In one of his TV addresses, he actually mentioned Evernote. And he said, I'm hearing so much about Evernote, I need someone to train me on this. And he's just talking as a politician. I don't even know what he was talking about, but he mentioned that. And of course, I got Mr. Hong to train him directly. So that was kind of a cool thing. But
that's incredible.
That's the community that we were able to build in Korea. And it was simply amazing. And I think the only reason that we were successful is we listened to and watched and observed what was going on. Most Silicon Valley companies were coming to Korea and they were throwing around a lot of shirts and a lot of money, but they were not connecting with Koreans on a deeper level. And that's what we were able to do. And so I would have people from, it was Facebook, Google, and Uber all approached me and said, what are you doing here in Korea? Because you're punching so far above your weight that I just need to know, how are you doing this, right? And it wasn't that we were spending a ton. In fact, our budgets were minuscule compared. It was mainly staffing was our only budgets. I mean, we didn't do a lot of marketing. It was definitely not a lot of money put into it, but I think it was the way we connected amplified in such a huge way that we didn't have to worry about spending a ton of money.
Love that. It sounds like you did a masterful job of going deep, of understanding how the product really connects or can connect culturally and sort of natively, and then putting a lot of investment on top of that. That's fantastic. Troy, another thing that I think a lot of people have heard about Korea before they enter is the power and importance of these massive conglomerate companies like the Samsungs. As you mentioned, you had a massive partner with Korea Telecom. On the agency side, there's huge and powerful agencies that seem to be gatekeepers or people that can unlock doors. What's your experience with that? And how should I think about leveraging or at least operating with awareness of the power that some of these really large companies have if you're a company that's entering Korea?
Sure. That was one of my pillars was partnerships. And it was very important. I would say that, we also had a partnership with Samsung as well. This was in the days where you could actually get pre-installed on their devices, which was amazing. Unfortunately, those days have passed, but that was really, really good for us. But yeah, the chaebol, as they're called, the conglomerates, are definitely a force to be reckoned with, meaning they are very large, they control a lot of the economy, etc. I would say because we were B2C, we were able to see a lot of success on our own and not, like you said, the gatekeeper kind of thing, I think is more of a B2B scenario. So if you can imagine, I didn't have to worry about payment methods too much because credit cards were so ubiquitous at the time and still are. So I avoided a lot of the typical messiness that you need partners and gatekeepers, if you will, agencies to help you get around. So I think we were lucky in a way. It was mainly figuring out who to partner with and how to get those partnerships done. And it was an interesting dynamic because we were so popular at the time that we had a lot of value that we were bringing to the table just as they were. So it almost felt like the small little, ant dealing with the Goliath. We actually had a pretty good value exchange, almost even value exchange, where we were bringing the cool factor of Silicon Valley, which at the time was a big deal, and the Chaebol needed to be seen as doing cool and interesting and innovative things. They had the sheer numbers of subscribers, people, et cetera, that they could get us in front of. So that was kind of a good point in time where it was a good exchange. Now, fast forward to what I'm doing now, which is more B2B. Well, guess what? We need to invoice in Korean won. I don't want to have necessarily at this point an entity over there to kind of facilitate that. So it is going to take partnerships, bigger companies that we partner with and we enable them to sell on our behalf, service on our behalf, and things of that nature. So I think it depends on how you're going into Korea with what type of product and how you need to access the market. Agencies, when I first went to Korea, that was one of the biggest things. One of the most outspoken startup people in really, at the time he was just absolutely famous, Richard Min. He came from, grew up in New York, but Korean descent, and ended up going to Korea to start the startup ecosystem. And he essentially did. But he was kind of saying, hey, you need agency, you need a partner, you need this, that, and the other. And then 2 years later, he came to me and said, Troy, I apologize, you freaking nailed it. But I do think that I was benefiting from some unique elements at play that today, I'm going to be looking at it very differently. I'm going to be looking at partnering with larger companies that want to sell to businesses what we're offering, right? So B2B, I think, is a different game, and that's going to require a different philosophy and strategy of how you go about it. So I think agencies, I don't know, I am just inherently very negative on agencies. I've never had really good experience with them. I've never heard of anyone having really tremendous experience with agencies. I think more direct partnerships is the play that I'm going for. So going directly to a cybersecurity firm or a cloud security provider and showing them how they can sell what I'm selling, which is Drata, right? So that's going to be my approach now. Not necessarily agencies, but more so direct partnership into relevant companies that want to sell what we have.
That's a good segue, I think, into talking a little more about today and what it's like going in today. A lot has changed, obviously, in the world, but I even noticed that the Korean market in the time that I started until now has evolved a lot. And maybe tactically speaking, you talked a lot about some best practices and some thoughts about how to think about it, how to get deeper and to resonate and to take sort of a native approach and to tie into those really deep things that will propel you. But when it comes time to actually put boots on the ground, what advice would you give to someone today in terms of when is the right time to start hiring people? Where do you go to look for talent in Korea, and any guidance on that, the first couple of hires that you make there?
Yeah, this is the biggest challenge, no matter how you cut it. Finding the right people and kind of like knowing the timing of when to put people in. So right now, what I'm looking at, like we at Drata right now have a product that is selling like hotcakes globally, right? Like so we have account executives, salespeople that we know we can support, you know, with business. So the model is really looking to localize. We're not localized into Korean yet, and we know we need to be. So we're localizing this quarter. By the end of Q3, we should be in a position where we're fully localized. And my next step will be working with the partnership angle and trying to get some initial success with partnerships, because those can be turned up a lot quicker. It's not as huge of a commitment. But once we start seeing success with partners that validates the market and shows us that there's definitely a market there for what we're offering, sufficiently large enough for us to get comfortable with hiring people, then it would be account executives that I would be looking to hire in more of a direct more of a direct selling fashion to companies in Korea, as well as working the partnership angle also. But that's kind of my view of how I'm looking at Korea today. I always like to lean into momentum and where you see things taking off, rather than making an assumption and leaning into it too heavily and having that be a mistake. So, but as soon as I do get traction, then I lean in beyond heavily, right? And go after it. So that's kind of the way I like to approach things. So that's how I'll be doing Korea this time around in a B2B fashion. I'll probably talk with some agencies more just to learn, but also be talking with a lot of companies from a partnership perspective, because I think that's really where we're going to get our traction and figure out the market from there. And just one thing on the local angle. So like Evernote had that really distinct, you know, Kiroke Munhwa, you know, angle of deep cultural connection. Don't really have that as much, I would say, with Drata. I mean, we're cybersecurity. We help people get SOC 2 and ISO compliant in an automated way. So, you know, that's not as much of a cultural thing, but what angle I'm going to be taking is just complementing the Korean startup ecosystem that I've seen mature over the years. It's kind of like a big congratulations and coming of age party for Korea in the startup and technology space, and using that as the segue into, okay, now these companies, these unicorns that you guys have created, now all have something pretty large to lose through not having a good security posture, right? And then kind of having that go into, you know, so congratulations, and here's how we can kind of help make sure that you maintain this and protect it, right, going forward. So that's going to be kind of the initial foray into the market.
This episode is brought to you by Globalization Partners. Many people assume that in order to enter a new country, you have to set up a new entity for your company, which can mean engaging in months of filings, years of investment obligations, legal fees, and a boatload of aspirin for all those headaches. That's a really heavy burden, especially if you're only hiring a few employees or if you're still testing a particular market. Globalization Partners invented a better way of hiring talent in other countries in 2012 that allows you to focus on hiring the talent you need and growing your company while they take care of the employment details. They provide locally compliant employee contracts, manage payroll, pensions, benefits, and a lot more as part of the package. And they cover 187 countries and 180 currencies. They offer all of this through their proprietary technology platform and provide experts you can call on when tricky situations come up anywhere in the world. And take it from me, these situations do come up frequently, and when they do, you want the most experienced people and the best technology behind you. For more information, visit globalizationpartners.com and choose the country you'd like to learn more about.
When you are ready to hire the first few people, is it the usual suspects in terms of LinkedIn, recruiters, and finding talent, or is there something nuanced about finding talent in Korea that you now know or you would want other people to be aware of?
I'm using both network as well as the usual things of LinkedIn and Facebook and stuff like that. And it's tough. I don't have a secret, you know, a secret to it, I would say. But I would say in Korea, I look for people that can think differently and be a little bit different than the typical expectations. And the reason I say that is I'm not hiring someone to work at Samsung where they're just a cog in the wheel and just go do what I tell you to. I'm looking for people, number one, that will question me when I say, hey, this is what I want to do. Rather than someone executing against that and having it come back a failure because of something they knew was going to be a failure, I would rather have them say, hey, it's a good idea, Troy, but in Korea, we might want to consider it differently. We might want to, you know, someone that can push back is a big thing that I look for and is a necessary thing. And I would say the culture has definitely come around in that regard, but there is still this, you don't tell your boss no kind of, you know, mentality. So trying to find people that are more in that vein. Most all the people I hired with Evernote were existing users. So our existing user base was a huge way to find good people. And the way I would get those people to percolate up and make themselves known is when we would do events, who's coming out and volunteering? Who's raising their hand and saying, hey, I'd love to help you. If you're doing a meetup, I'll come out and help. And then I would get to know them a little bit better and see what skill sets they had. And luckily, I was able to find the skill sets I needed within these people that were proactively loving the brand first and helping the brand and then kind of becoming an employee. And if you can imagine, that type of employee is golden because they're there first for the brand and that ethos as opposed to just their own personal stuff. Of course, we take care of people well, but they weren't coming just for the job. They were coming for the brand. And then the job was the absolute dream job for them.
Fabulous. Well, that's a good segue to maybe the last area of questions that I have for you today, which is culturally, a lot of the people who listen to this are going to be coming into Korea from other places, often the United States or Europe, where the culture of management, of having employees is different. You touched on a couple of things in your last answer about the notion of hierarchy of people maybe being comparatively reluctant to challenge their superiors, and especially in a public setting, reluctance to push back potentially or to say no. Are there any things that a manager, if they're going to have a team in Korea soon and has no experience managing a team there, things that they should be aware of, things like that, where there's going to be some differences and they need to know X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, for sure. The initial issue that I ran into was the initial country manager that I put in was very hierarchical, as expected in that culture. And frankly, went on to be very successful with a Korean company, which I think was a better match, right? We're still in touch to this day. But it wasn't the right fit for us because by design, we had a very small team. And I think a lot of people that go into Korea initially will start with small teams. And so I didn't want one person at the head to insulate the rest of the team from me, the rest of the team from the organization. And the reason is because ideas can come from an intern. They can come from a low level, you know, individual contributor, and they should. And so I needed someone who wasn't feeling like they needed to be protective in a way to insulate from the rest of the organization, but they could actually encourage and surface great ideas regardless of where they came from. That was kind of a big cultural nuance that I had to really look for and figure out and make sure that that was the case. And I'd say it was a combination of looking for people that I thought had those kind of capabilities and personalities, but also a lot of training, right? Like, so I think you're going to have to spend some time on training and expectations so that people feel comfortable questioning you. People feel comfortable surfacing ideas that may not be perfect, right? Like those kind of things is what I think training helped a lot with. And this is just kind of the culture that you can create. So if you start celebrating some of the wins that come from those unexpected places or people and encouraging your managers to do that and showing them that that is a positive thing in your eyes, then that's a way to create that kind of culture and team. Because entering a new market is like a new startup. You never know the twists and turns that you're going to go down. So you need people that are always thinking and surfacing ideas of how can we do this better? How can we get more traction? How can we lean into this aspect, that aspect more to get more output? So that's kind of what I like to create, and it's served me well. The other alternative, I think it takes a while for you to realize that you're failing. Mm-hmm. And that's dangerous, right? Like you want to know quickly if things are going wrong, and let's all expect things to go wrong to a certain degree and, you know, double back around to figure out how we have them go right quickly.
It's a great point. And in my own experience, I learned that I think a lot of Silicon Valley companies are famous for embracing things like radical candor, wanting to know really where the problems are instead of just hearing, oh, everything you're doing is right. And I think that we had the biggest challenge in getting that cultural value communicated and kind of really embraced in Korea versus other places, because I think people were reluctant to share things that would be seen as contrarian or bad news sometimes.
Yep, for sure.
Fabulous. Well, let me just wrap up, Troy, with a couple of questions. You mentioned that you saw some companies coming to Korea, throwing around money, not really spending the time to find the deeper connections that they might make with the communities and with the market overall. Are there any other mistakes that you see people commonly making when they enter Korea that you would warn people against?
Koreans are fiercely democratic and love to voice their opinions and don't want to be spoon-fed a certain narrative. If you look at Naver, the search engine in Korea, which is the Google of Korea, and it truly is. I mean, it just has market dominance. That's what they do. They spoon feed. It's all contrived, right? It's not based on merit or what may match your interest or truly what you want to figure out. So Google had the opportunity, if they would have kind of like connected those dots, to say, hey, do you want to be over here where it's kind of like the man, or do you want to be over here where it's us and the community and truth, right, that you can kind of find. So that's an example of kind of missing the boat, right? And just thinking if you put your logo out there, you'll get recognition and people will come. So that was a big one. I would say another one for B2C startups, and I don't know if this is still would work, but like, for instance, we put our office in a college town in Seoul, called Myeongdong, which is a kind of hip college town where all the kind of young generation goes, hangs out, drinks, buys stuff. It's big markets. It's just Korea. It's true Korea. And whenever, you know, and all the big Silicon Valley companies always go to the financial centers of any given city. So they'll go to, remember Gangnam style? Well, Gangnam is the financial center. Frankly, it's boring, stodgy. It's like, who wants to be there unless you want to be a banker working in a cubicle cranking out spreadsheets, right? It's like not cool. And the financial centers of any large city internationally are generic. They don't represent that particular country that well. Whereas this college town, Myeongdong, was absolutely Korea. And I would tell whenever I did interviews with newspapers or whatever, I would say the reason we put our office here is because if you go to Gangnam, the smells are Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts. I have no interest in that. The smells of Myeongdong are kimchi jjigae, doenjang jjigae, and I'd name off the local cuisines and they would just melt like, oh, they really understand Korea, right? So those kind of nuance, pay attention to those kind of things in everything that you do. And I think that can make a huge difference. So I would say that's a big mistake that I see people make, is thinking you can just plant a flag, your flag, and not really connecting it truly with that country. I think is a big mistake that I see a lot.
This has been fantastic, Troy. Thank you so much for sharing all these anecdotes and stories. I really loved in particular hearing about how you really found this cultural resonance and also the people that really helped you translate what you were trying to accomplish and, you know, gave you really good advice on the ground, like Mr. Hong, I believe.
Yep.
And I think that I think about those people in every market. There's always a few people in my experience that have really educated us tremendously and helped us crack the code in the market. Troy, if there's any parting thoughts you have, or if people wanted to reach out to you and get a little more information, how should they do so?
Yeah, feel free to reach me on LinkedIn. I'm the only bald Troy Malone on LinkedIn, so I'm easy to find. But yeah, feel free to connect with me, and I'd be happy to talk shop and both share some anecdotes from my experience, and I would love to learn from the broader community as well for not just Korea, but many other countries as well. I'm always trying to figure out things myself. So connecting with like-minded professionals in this space would be fabulous.
Well, thank you so much for your openness and your curiosity and willingness to share your stories with everybody who's listening. Trey, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to the International Expansion Podcast. If you found this information helpful, I hope you'll subscribe and share this info with a friend or colleague. As a reminder, if you or your company is looking for guidance on your international expansion journey, from sizing and prioritizing markets to getting up to speed on local conditions, finding world-class talent, or building up your brand and revenue, please visit portofentrypartners.com and send us a note. Until next time, take care.